So this week, as we continue on, remember that last week I kind of started with this question that, you know, what's the most important thing in your life? You know, we kind of bounced around a couple of things. And then I suggested that maybe if we kind of had to nail it down to one thing, it's probably our relationships. That, you know, it's our relationships that really kind of impact our lives or our connection to so many things. You know, we talked about personal relationships, recognizing that we actually have a relationship with ourselves, recognizing that we all have a relationship with God. Now, your relationship with God may vary, right? Some people may have a very close relationship with God. Other people may have kind of a distant, kind of not even really recognizing that the relationship exists. I think some of us have a relationship that when things go wrong, we're really interested in God. But when it's all running smoothly, I got it from here, God. I'll call you next time I need you, sort of thing. And so what I want to do is I want to continue that discussion about relationships. So in our series Connection Points, what I want to do is I want to look at this idea of relationships a bit more broadly. You know, because we often think about relationships with the people that we really know. But I'd like to suggest that God considers us all to have relationships much more broadly than that. That God really calls us to look at the idea of we're all connected to one another. And we're all responsible to care for one another at the level that we can. And when we're aware of people who are in need, and there are things where we can maybe provide support, that God, from the earliest days, seems to expect that of his people. That his people should be the ones who are willing to step out and care for those who are in need. So as we go through this today, what I'd like to do is we're going to continue our walk through the book of Ruth, but we're going to look at a couple of other things along with it. And I'm going to look at a book that we don't talk about a lot in church, not because there's something wrong with it. It's just, it's the book of Leviticus. And how many people have read Leviticus beginning to end? No judgment if you have it. There you go. You know why? Because it is a tough book to read. Because what Leviticus is the law that God had laid down for his original followers. So it is literally kind of verse after verse of don't do this, don't do that, do this other thing, don't do that other thing. But what we find is that, remember what did Jesus tell us? That all of that complexity, all that stuff in the law, the 600 plus laws that are explicitly in there, what ultimately became thousands of laws under the first century Pharisees, Jesus says that stuff all boils down to a few things, right? Love one another and love God, right? And then Jesus actually even kind of plussed that love one another thing, which is love others as I have loved you. And so what you find when you look at the book of Leviticus is God kind of goes through it kind of piece by piece. He kind of gives you kind of general things to keep in mind. And he just gives a whole bunch of other, they're actually laws, but they're kind of examples. Now, we're not going to go through all those detailed ones, but as we walk through this portion of the book of Ruth today, we're going to look at some of the ones that apply. And then we're also going to kind of contrast those a little bit to some New Testament stuff. We're going to actually look at some of the writings of Jesus' brother, James. And the thing I always like to point out is that it's important to recognize that although James became a leader in the first century church, he was actually one of the kind of most senior people in the first century church. During Jesus' earthly ministry, James did not believe in Jesus. If you read the Gospels, Jesus' brothers thought he was crazy. You know, and when I say that, people are like, ooh, kind of blasphemy. But I'm going to ask you a question. Your brother walks up to you and says, I'm the Son of God. Are you going to believe your brother if he says that to you? Your neighbor or your friend or any of those people. But what's really amazing is that once Jesus went to the cross and died and was resurrected, James then believed. And so James, I find to be this kind of really powerful viewpoint on kind of what we're doing our what we're to do with our relationship with God. So I want to pick up with the book of Ruth. Now remember that when we left off last week, Ruth and Naomi had made this kind of really arduous journey, right? That they'd been off in this other country called Moab, right? It was outside the nation of Judah, what we know as Israel now. Remember that Ruth was a Moabite. She had lost her husband. Naomi was her mother-in-law who had also lost her husband. And in Moab, they were facing poverty. So they made this long journey all the way back to Naomi's hometown of Bethlehem. Now, this is the same Bethlehem we know from the Jesus story, but it's 1,000 years before Jesus. So it's like 3,000, it's actually 3,000 plus years ago. And the thing we find is that after that long journey to escape poverty in Moab, when we left off last week, what did they find in Bethlehem? Poverty. They made that journey and it really hadn't changed because the situation was the same. In the ancient world, you know, that it was a patriarchal society, that a woman was not really able to support herself due to societal issues, right? Even if she had the skills to do it, she couldn't. So as we pick up this week, Ruth is faced with this reality, right? That she has said to Naomi, I will stay with you, and I will be with you, and I will leave my homeland to go to yours. Because remember that for Naomi, coming to Bethlehem was coming home. But for Ruth, it was leaving home. And she's facing all this far away from home. So Ruth decides that she has to do something. And so basically, as we jump into Ruth today, Ruth says this to Naomi. It says, and Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor. What she's basically saying is that in order to survive, I'm going to go scrounge for food. That I'll go out to the fields that have already been harvested and look for anything that gets left behind. And whatever I gather up, you and I can share. Now, the thing to understand is that for Ruth, this is a pretty scary undertaking. You know, keep in mind that in the ancient world, it was a deeply nationalist society. In general, foreigners were not looked at favorably unless they had some kind of important connection. So she's going to go out as a foreigner to start kind of digging through these fields. She's also a young woman by herself. She's taking a really big chance, but she's basically saying, I'm not going to let us starve. Then Naomi, I'm going to do what I can to keep us going. But there's something that Ruth didn't know. And Naomi says something to her that on the surface to us seems like no big deal. So Ruth makes the statement she's going to go out and start trying to gather food. And Naomi just says, go ahead, my daughter. Now you're like, okay, great, she's cheering for her. But what Naomi knows something that Ruth doesn't know. That from the earliest days, when God laid down the plans for his people, he actually laid down plans for always taking care of the poor. Right? That when the law was given to Moses, which we call it the Mosaic Law, that the Mosaic Law makes absolute accounts for the poor. And kind of everything we look at today is going to come from Leviticus chapter 19. And so Leviticus chapter 19, it says this. When you reap the harvest of your land, do not reap to the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. Do not go over your vineyard a second time or pick up the grapes that have fallen. Leave them for the poor and the foreigner. I am the Lord your God. So what is ordered under the Mosaic Law, that if you are fortunate enough to have land to grow food, and you grow food, you are not to collect all that food. And this is separate from the tax you or the tithe you would have paid to the temple. The orders were that you were to leave all the food along the edges so that those who were poor, it says the poor and the foreigner, could approach the fields from the edges and collect what they could. It also says that if you drop something or if you miss anything on the first pass, you don't go back for it. All that is to be left there for the poor. Now, Naomi knew this was the case. Ruth didn't. So Ruth was willing to head out and do this work. And what Naomi is saying is that, go ahead and do that. You'll be okay, that the law requires that. But now, one of the things that's kind of interesting is that, remember that this all takes place during the time of the judges. Right? And we talked about this last week. And do you remember how the Bible describes the time of the judges? Where everyone did what was right in their own eyes. Otherwise, everyone did what they wanted. So what that means is that there would be some people who would honor the law and keep the law, and there are other people who would not. So that this isn't just a slam dunk for Ruth, but at least in her culture, in this culture where she's located, in this country where she's located, what she wants to do is actually allowed, and landowners are encouraged to actually, you know, provide for people this way. Right, so Ruth heads out, and she goes looking through the fields, and she kind of gets this kind of initial field. And the way things are laid out is that she's in the city of Bethlehem, but the fields are kind of outside the city itself. So she kind of heads out from the city, gets out to the fields, and the field that she goes to visit belongs to kind of the third party in our story, which is a guy named Boaz. Now, Boaz would be a little bit older than Ruth is. He's a successful man. He's a man of standing. And we very quickly learn what kind of person Boaz is. Because as Ruth is out there, so the field workers are in front of her. She's following behind them, picking up whatever gets left behind. The narrative tells us that just then, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. "The Lord be with you, and the Lord bless you," they answered. Now, what's interesting about that? What does that tell us about Boaz? Okay, well, Boaz, by ancient standards, is wealthy, he's high status, he's a landowner. The people working the fields are mostly day laborers, people who show up each day just hoping that there's some work to make enough money to get through today to do it again tomorrow. So what that tells us is that because of Boaz's status, he had every right to not even acknowledge those folks. He didn't need to give them a wave. He didn't need to do anything. He had people for that. He like literally has people on his payroll who handle those workers. But Boaz doesn't do that. He doesn't use his status as a reason to look at other people differently. And what he's doing is he's actually embracing another statement from Leviticus chapter 19. Because in Leviticus 19 comes a very familiar phrase to most of us. "Love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord." This is one that Jesus quoted often. Right? If you read through the Gospels, Jesus is constantly reinforcing this idea to love your neighbor as yourself. And what Boaz is doing here is he's actually treating those people the way he'd want to be treated if he was in their position. Right, and that's what love your neighbor as yourself is about, right? In every situation, right, to look at a person's circumstance and say, well, if I was in that circumstance, if I was in need as that person is, if I was having to work through this very difficult job day after day just to get through the day, how would I want to be treated? And basically, Boaz says, well, I'd want to be treated with respect. I'd want to be treated as a human being. And so Boaz does that. And one of the things that we know, that throughout all of history, the people of God were always supposed to be doing that. Right? Going back to the Mosaic Law, which is kind of the initial law for the Hebrews when they were freed, was to treat others with the way you want to be treated. Right? Love your neighbor as yourself. Jesus, on this side of the resurrection, is saying that you are to not just love your neighbor as yourself, but love others as I have loved you. That the very hallmark of the people of God for thousands of years is meant to be people who treat others the way they want to be treated. And with Jesus, it's like, treat them with the love and compassion that Jesus extended to people. Now, we know that although we've always been called to do that as the people of God, we also know we don't always get it right. And this happens over and over again. It happens over and over in the Old Testament, where they kind of lose sight of that. And it turns out that within a few decades of Jesus, it's already starting to happen. And so Jesus' brother James, actually as a leader in the church, eventually has to deal with this issue. That he finds that some of the churches that he's responsible for are not walking forward with this idea of love your neighbor as yourself. That they're actually not caring for the poor. They're ignoring the poor. They're putting the poor down. And so James says, I have to deal with this. And so the book of James in the New Testament is actually just a letter that James writes to this church to kind of address these issues. And the people that he's writing to are what we call Jewish Christians, meaning that they were people who grew up Jewish and then put their faith in Jesus, that following the death and resurrection of Jesus, they became Christians. And so James says that he has to write to them and say, you can't do this, that as the people of God, we're supposed to do better than this. So looking at what James wrote, he says, "My dear brothers and sisters, how can you claim to have faith in our glorious Lord Jesus Christ if you favor some people over others? other words, James has learned that this church is making distinctions, that the people who are wealthy and have status, well, they're treating them well, and they're chasing after them, and they're really interesting. But they're ignoring the poor, and they're not caring for the poor. And so James says, we can't be doing that. And then he actually wants to lay out an example to make his point. He actually says that, imagine you're in a room, and in that room, a wealthy person in expensive clothes and fine jewelry walks in, and then a poor person in old, dirty clothes walks in. And then James goes on to say, if you give special attention and a good seat to the rich person, but you say to the poor one, you can stand over there, you know what, you can sit on the floor. Well, doesn't this discrimination show that your judgment is guided by evil motives? And it's interesting, if you take the Greek, where it actually says, it shows your judgment is guided by evil motives, if you literally translate the Greek, it says you are an unjust judge, a corrupt judge, someone who does not judge fairly. If you look at someone's circumstance and you actually elevate some person and denigrate the other based on their circumstance, you're an unjust judge. Because you're doing things exactly the opposite of how God does things. You're judging people by the outside, by their circumstance, by their appearance. And that's not what God does. Right? God judges based on what's in our hearts and how we live and by what we do. And so you're evaluating a person that way is actually contrary to the ways of God. You're actually dishonoring the poor. And then he says, goes on from there, he says, understand, there is a good way to do things and a wrong way to do things. So he starts out with the good way to do things. He says, yes, indeed, it is good when you obey the royal law as found in the scriptures. Love your neighbor as yourself. And so again, he's quoting from Leviticus 19, that James is literally referencing Leviticus 19, even in the New Testament, saying that that has always been the way, that has always been how the people of God are to behave. And so as he references this, what we're realizing is that Leviticus 19 kind of gives us this foundation for how we are to treat people, right? Because it's Leviticus 19 that says that you must leave food behind for the poor. In other words, that part of your resources are always to be helping out the poor, right? It's Leviticus 19 that actually is the reason that Ruth could safely go out and gather food. And it's Leviticus 19 that lays the foundation for Boaz treating those day workers so favorably. So James says, that's you know, the royal law, that's how we're supposed to be. But then he says, but if you favor some people over others, you're committing a sin. Now, it's interesting, right, as we've talked about a bunch of times, this idea of sin, right, the idea is something a sin doesn't mean you go to the master sin list, you know, the Britannica sin list, and you flip through and look for your special sin, right? That's not how sin works. We know that Jesus explains to us that sin is anything that harms yourself or someone else. So what James is saying, that when you look at a person's circumstance, and you think less of them because of their circumstance, because they are poor, because they are needy, because they've reached a point in their life that they're struggling to take care of themselves. If you look down on them because of that, you're harming them. I mean, what James basically says here is that whether you actually refuse to feed a poor person when you're able to help, or you just look down on them, God looks at both of those situations and says that's a sin, that you're doing wrong to that person, that you're actually harming that person. So now back to Boaz. Excuse me. So back to Boaz, right? Knowing that he's kind of embraced these ideas of, you know, allowing the poor to come to his farm, of treating people well. While he's out there and he's greeted the people, excuse me, he actually notices that the girl behind them who's kind of gleaning is someone he doesn't know. So he goes to his foreman and says, hey, who's the girl back there who's gathering in the fields? Not because he wants to get rid of her, he just doesn't recognize her. And the foreman says to him, oh, that's the Moabite, the Moab girl who came back with Naomi and is taking care of Naomi. And the thing is that Bethlehem was a small town. So once Boaz heard that, he would have heard the whole story, because the stories of Ruth the Moabite who came back with Naomi would have traveled throughout the whole town. And so what Boaz does is that he recognizes that Ruth is doing something extraordinary. Right? Ruth is not only in a difficult situation herself, being poor and a foreigner in a foreign land, but also she's taking responsibility for Naomi. I mean, we gather that Naomi is probably fairly old, or she might be sick. Because you notice that as Ruth goes out to gather food, Naomi doesn't come along. Most likely because she was unable to come along. So Boaz recognizes that Ruth is a person who's decided to help even when she didn't know how she was going to help. And she's simply doing what she can. So Boaz actually makes a decision to really help her further. So if you read through chapter 2 of the book of Ruth, what you find is that Boaz kind of gets some time with her, invites her to come eat with the rest of the crew. So not just allows her to pick, but actually gives her a prepared meal, tells her that she is free to access the water whenever she needs to. And then he goes further. He says, each day, I don't want you to go to another field. Come to this field each day. And there are women who work for me. Stay with them. They know the places you can safely go. And he tells his young men, leave her alone, because she would have been very vulnerable. So what does Boaz do? He goes above and beyond this simple idea of, you know, giving her food because she's poor. He's saying that if that was my daughter, right, if that was my sister, what would I want someone to do for her? He takes that basic standard of love your neighbor as yourself and he elevates it. He lives it out. And so once he does this and he tells all this stuff to Ruth, she's just blown away. She doesn't expect this. She was just hoping to get enough food to get through the night. So after Boaz tells her all this, it says that this, Ruth bowed down with her face to the ground. And she asked him, why have I found such favor in your eyes that you even notice me, a foreigner? And what we're reminded of is that Ruth is in an incredibly difficult situation. And in spite of her own difficulties, she would not abandon Naomi. And as she stepped out to do what she could do, Boaz has become aware of the situation. And it shows us the incredible man that he is. Right? That he steps in and does what he can to relieve the situation. And the thing that I find so interesting is as I walk through this, and we've only walked through like 10 verses today. The thing we find is that this fundamental law of God, of how the people of God are to treat people around them, not just the people that they know, but the people that they encounter, that we are all in relationship with the people around us. We all have responsibility for one another. We all are responsible to make a difference in the lives around us. I mean, one of the key things about that rule of you have to leave the food behind, God is saying that you have to make provisions for the poor. And now some might argue that, well, I do, I give to the temple in their case. And the world is like, no, you give to the temple anyway. You do this too. That we are all called to take responsibility for what's happening in people's lives. That, yes, you support your church, but we all should have a personal investment in making a difference in people's lives. Whether you do it with resources, whether you do it with your abilities, whether you do it with your time. That we are all to recognize that as the people of God, we are responsible for other people. We are. That's what we are called to be. I mean, if you don't put your faith in Jesus and you don't care about any of this, it's up to you. But if you say that your faith is in Jesus Christ, that Jesus is your Lord, this is what we are called to do. Because it's to be the hallmark of the people of God. Of so much of what we are called to do can be traced back to those two verses in Leviticus 19, right? Love your neighbor as yourself and making allowances for the poor and for the foreigner. And then what I find kind of interesting is that as you look at Leviticus 19, there's another verse that comes along that I find kind of interesting in the way it reinforces things. And this is actually Leviticus 19:34. So we've already said, love your neighbor as yourself. And we've already said, make provisions for the poor and the foreigner. And then Leviticus 19:34 says this. The foreigner residing among you must be treated as your native born. Love them as yourself, for you were foreigners in Egypt. I am the Lord your God. Now what it's saying is that, and this was a very foreign idea in the ancient world, right? National identity was a huge, huge factor. And God, giving the law to Moses, says, you know, I want to be really clear about this. I've told you to love your neighbor as yourself and care for the poor and the foreigner. When a foreigner follows the process and moves into your midst, they are not less. That they are part of the family now. And part of what this does is this points forward to Jesus, right? Because the family of God was the Jews. And the New Testament is clear that that remains the case, but we are adopted into that family. So God is pointing forward saying that my people will always acknowledge the foreigner who comes into their midst. And they will treat them fairly and correctly. They will treat them like their own. And so a key part of being the people of God is to recognize that when we talk about this idea of caring for the foreigner, why does he repeat that so much? I mean, first, it's the issues I mentioned, but also from the perspective of the ancient world, the foreigner is the most vulnerable among us, right? Because in the ancient world, we talked about this a lot the past few weeks, your security and your safety and your identity was where you lived, where you had grown up. So whenever a person ventured out from that to go to a foreign place, right? Whether we're talking about Abraham, or you're talking about some of the other folks we've talked about in recent weeks, you're leaving your security. And so they are the epitome of those who are in need. So God says that my people do not take advantage of the hurting and the down. My people defend them. My people speak out when they see things that are wrong. My people do what they can to help. And what we find in the story of Ruth is we'll see that as Boaz answers that call in his life, and as we continue this next week, we'll see that it actually changes his life. It changes Ruth's life. It changes Naomi's life because he embraces this call to do this. And ultimately, Boaz embracing that call actually changes your life and my life. Now, as we finish up, there's kind of one last thing I want to touch base on for a second. Is that over and over in both the Old Testament and the New Testament, God calls us to remember, right, that every one of us have struggled at some point in our lives, right? In the case of the Hebrews, they were literally enslaved to a foreign nation, lost in a desert for decades before they found their homeland. What Jesus teaches us and shows us and demonstrates to us is that we have all been lost. We were all on a path of destruction. And then we were rescued. We were given mercy and grace. So as the people of God, that is always to be our call, to look out to the most vulnerable among us, to provide support to them, to not take advantage of people because they're in a weaker position than us. And then we should go further than that. That we should stand up for them, and we should fight for them, and we should provide the care to them that we can.